Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome, everybody, to the final episode of our past apocalypse season. My name is Adrian. I'm joined for this special ranking of the apocalypse by my co-host, Rod Barnett. Hello, Rod.
Hello.
How do you feel now that we've reached the end of the wastelands?
Well, I have checked myself. I don't have any radiation sores that I'm aware of. I still have what little hair on top of my head still remains. So I feel as if we may have got, a toenail has fallen off. Perhaps something did stay with me. This is not a good thing. Yeah. Oh, well, I'll check on it later. Everyone ignore the blood. I feel like we made it through, being entertained as always by these films. I think we came out of this, smiling. Thank goodness.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I don't think I have, grown any extra fingers or toes, but I may have developed psychic powers.
Well, so, that's terrifying.
All good, really. So what we're going to do, I'm going to ask you, Rod, to go first, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And give us your top 10. Well, I mean, obviously it is only 10. The order of the 10, according to whatever sort of metric you choose. But if you can sort of give us the films and your reasoning for your choices.
Certainly.
And then I'll do mine. So go ahead.
I think near the bottom of my list, there will be some surprises.
Okay.
I think that without a doubt, I have to give Pride of Place the number one slot to The Tenth Victim. I think it's such a very different kind of film from the others that it stands out in a number of different ways. But The Tenth Victim to me is, while it does fit the category of post-apocalyptic film in a lot of different ways, it is also an exceptionally well-made film that's got a lot on its mind that I think is one that fits very comfortably both within the art house and the exploitation world to a degree. Mm-hmm. And I just think that it's one that it's a good surprise for people who maybe have never checked it out. And of course, all of the things that it influenced as we went through all these other films, realization that maybe some people are being influenced by The Tenth Victim and may not even be aware that they're being influenced by it because the influence that they think they're drawing on was something that was originally inspired by The Tenth Victim. So number one there for me. Number two, and remember, this is all just based on the amount that I enjoyed these movies.
Okay.
Number two. 2019, After the Fall of New York. I love that movie. Absolutely love that movie from head to toe. It is completely insane. It has all the faults and all the virtues of these films, and I absolutely love it from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Another film, and it's one that I've known for years, and so it kind of has a nostalgic glow for me as well. The same is true of number three, Warriors of the Year 2072, although I think we both agree that it may or may not necessarily be a post-apocalyptic film. Maybe it's just in the future. But still a movie that I really, really enjoy and have a lot of affection for. Number four, Bronx Warriors. Just an unescapable classic of the genre. It's so good.
Yeah.
Such a good film. Such an entertaining movie. Regardless of the inherent flaws that come with this genre, no matter what you do. I love the Bronx Warriors. I want to grab it and hug it and tell it that I love it. Number five, a little bit, probably going to be some surprises here. 2020 Texas Gladiators. I really do enjoy that movie.
Yeah,
there's a lot in Texas Gladiators to get me on its side, and it certainly serves its perfect purpose as being part of the post-apocalyptic genre. And I'm sorry, it's just super entertaining. I get a kick out of it. Number six, a little bit of a surprise here. Exterminators of the Year 3000. I really enjoyed this film. Not as familiar with it, but my goodness, did it do its job effectively. Number seven, Endgame. Always enjoyed Endgame. I still think the poster art is better than the movie. But
oh, absolutely.
But I think that with poster art like Endgame has, that would just have to be true. But I do love Endgame, so it's number seven.
Mm-hmm.
Number eight, A Man Called Rage. It's a new one to me. It's one that, you know, seeing it many years after its production date, may have enhanced it in a certain way, because I come to it with a lot of knowledge of the genre on top of just the film itself. And it certainly has all of the standard flaws that you would expect from the genre. But Man Called Rage, a lot of great action sequences, very well filmed. Once the action kicks in every time, it's an effective film and you can't take your eyes off of it. Man Called Rage surprised me.
Yeah, and a very good-looking heroic hero. No. In the lead role.
This is true. This is true. Number nine. Raiders of Atlantis. I've never been a big fan of Raiders of Atlantis, and going back to it and watching it on Blu-ray has not made me a bigger fan of it. I'm not saying I can't enjoy watching Raiders of Atlantis. I kind of do. But at the same time, it has so many freaking problems. It's so discombobulated. None of the pieces really fit together, and it becomes so distracting as I watch the movie every time. Raiders of Atlantis is just not a favorite for me, folks. And then I'm gonna round it out with our most recent film, The Final Executioner, simply because at least with Raiders of Atlantis, there's some entertainment to be had to spot ridiculous things like the fact that the supposedly stone floor is clearly a piece of plastic they've painted because it's bunching up where people step. But in The Final Executioner, there's just not as much to enjoy, and it feels as if, you know, parts of the movie didn't make it into the final print, and some ideas kind of got left to the side. So
yeah, at least with Raiders of Atlantis, they managed to have access to the Mad Max costume shop.
Yes,
whereas that was obviously, that had gone out of business by the time The Last Executioner was made.
Yes, exactly. And so The Final Executioner comes up at the end, but at the same time, I know that one day down the road, I will probably rewatch even The Final Executioner just for giggles. So that would be the order in which I would rate these films.
Right. Well, that was good. Okay, some interesting choices there. I'd very much like to hear from anyone listening who wants to tell us their thoughts on that. Now, I've gone for a slightly different approach this time.
Oh,
I'm gonna start at 10. That's my first difference. But I've also listed these in the order of which film worlds I would like to live in.
Okay.
So. Again, so it's interesting. There's some correlation and some difference with yours. So in 10, The Last Executioner. It's a dreary, depressing world of Italian villas and abandoned factories, and no one seems the slightest bit happy.
Yeah, true.
No, they are all depressed. There's a bit we didn't mention when we covered that film. They've all raped and killed this woman. And then there's another scene where this young boy, again, there's something that they didn't tell us. He's got this thing on his head that allows him to watch on a screen his memories of what he just saw or something. And he's sitting there with his eyes transfixed on the footage of people raping this woman on the screen, which they never showed in the film. But, at the time, it was done off camera. But then he's like reliving it by having this mind probe. It's like a weird bit of future tech that they never talk about again.
Yeah.
It's so strange. So no one's happy, not even the rapist, murderer, hunter guys. So that's at number 10. I don't want to live there.
Okay.
Number 9, Exterminators of the Year 3000. There's basically a lack of water, and we kind of need water. So I'm not sure I want to live in a world where I have to fight just to have a drink, which ironically is probably the world that we're all going to end up living in the most.
If we're not careful.
Out of all of these things. Yeah. The way things are going, the world is on fire, people. So yeah, maybe I need to come to terms with that. But at the moment, that's number nine. Number eight, 2019, after the fall of New York, you do get to drive around in cool cars and stuff, but New York is full of mutants, like Big Ape and King Rat, and they just seem like difficult people to get on with, so I'm not sure I'd want to live there.
Yeah, there's not a lot of negotiating with them, that's true.
No. Next, I chose A Man Called Rage for number seven, because basically it seems like it could be quite fun. Because, you know, yes, there are bad guys and life is quite difficult, but the bad guys spend most of their time disco dancing. So,
Okay, fair point.
The villains, their prime concern is where they're going to get their next vinyl from rather than anything else. So that doesn't seem too bad. The next film, number six, 2020 Texas Gladiators. So the people of Freetown. Do you remember how it starts out where they're all wearing leathers dressed like Mad Max, but then, you know, cut to a couple of months later and they're all living in Freetown working in the factory and they're just wearing regular overalls and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, oh, they didn't have to wear all that leather stuff after all. So they seemed quite happy until obviously the evil Nazi people came along and destroyed it. But I feel like that seemed like if you could be part of the good society of Freetown, you'd have a good time. Number five, Raiders of Atlantis, because basically it's just the normal world.
Yeah.
But there is there is that worry that the Atlanteans might come back at any moment. So, you know, you can't relax.
Yeah, I mean, Raiders of Atlantis is essentially supposedly 1990, so that doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah. So it's fine unless the Atlanteans come back. So number four, I chose Endgame.
Okay.
As long as you don't have to play Endgame and you're not a mutant, life is generally not too bad, and there's some quite entertaining stuff on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are a mutant, at least you get to hang out with Laura Gemser.
Well, okay, you're right. I hadn't thought about that. It's true.
So that's a number four. Number three, 1990, The Bronx Warriors. Now, it's quite a scary world, but I want to be the guy who sits by the dock playing the drums to underscore all gang confrontations.
Your percussion skills are going to save you, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So that's where I would be. I'd just be there drumming away all day whenever there's something going down between George Eastman and what's his name? Trash.
So your musical accompaniment, I understand.
Yeah, so that's it. So that's my role in that world. So number two, Warriors of the Year 2072. Mm-hmm. It's a futuristic kind of cool world where it seems like life is probably not too bad as long as you're not one of the gladiators or as long as you don't work for TV because they all seem quite depressed or in prison where you get made to be in the games. So obviously it depends, or you know, maybe life is great and you're living in that big greenhouse kind of dome place having a lovely life, but then they come and kill your family and frame you for murder. So maybe I've been a bit hasty putting that at number two, which of course leaves at number one. This is where Rod, you and I have top and tailed exactly the same way. Number one is The Tenth Victim.
Ah.
Because it's a pop art infused world where I think you're pretty safe as long as you're not actually playing the game.
True, very true.
And you get to just enjoy that fantastic 60s sort of retro future world. And if you're lucky, Ursula Andress might just run past you as she's trying to shoot somebody.
That would be fine. I would be happy with that.
Yeah. So that is my ranking. And so very interesting that we both got The Tenth Victim and The Last Executioner at the top and the bottom.
It is, yes, and yet our approaches were very different. Yeah. Very, very different.
I don't think it will surprise anybody that The Last Executioner was at the, I think by any metric, it would end up being the last film.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless we were listing them by how depressing they were, in which case it might do better.
Possibly.
But there you go. So let us know, you know, which of the films you've seen, and you know whether you would place any as higher or lower. I mean, I know it's basically ranking is kind of pointless exercise,
of course,
but it does give you an excuse to just sort of look back at what you've been watching and reflect on what you've learned from the experience. So it's
the joy of the compare and contrast, you know, and it's which, yeah. you know, which one you enjoyed more or. Which one, your choice, of course, to decide which one would be the best to live in. That's possibly a wiser way to look at these, the world they present, and whether or not you'd like to be within it. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
And speaking of worlds we may or may not want to live in, it's time for us to just quickly talk about our special bonus feature for this season. We were begged by one person... But that's all it takes.
Apparently, guys. That's all it takes.
That's all it takes. If you're listening, one person begging might probably do the trick. So Rich mentioned this months ago. We started this season in February, I should add. So it's been a while. That a particular favorite for him was Warrior of the Lost World, which is kind of an Italian film, but with an American director and quite a lot of American cast, but shot in Italy. So eventually we figured, right, we'll stick it on the end. So you and I, as a special treat, we watched Warrior of the Lost World.
Special treat.
So that we could just talk about it here. Now, this is a film that, as somebody who's not grown up watching MS3, what's it called? MS3TK.
MST3K. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I believe this was a bit of a treasured film. For aficionados of that, which now that I've seen the movie as is, I would like to see the MST3K version.
Oh yeah, yeah, it enhances.
I bet
the
it's
film.
Really funny.
Yeah, it enhances the film enormously.
I did read that they call Robert Ginty's character Sad Max, which
well, that when they're not just referring to him as the paper chase guy, so
so funny. So this is a film directed by David Wirth. Starring Robert Ginty, who does not have the right face for this kind of role. I'm not trying to body shame him or anything, but he doesn't have the looks for the sort of character he's supposed to play.
He has a baby face, which is why I've never been able to understand how he ended up in the exploitation films that he did.
Yeah, because of course most people would know him from his, you know, what was it called again?
Oh, The Executioner.
The Executioner, that was good, wasn't it? We know him from...
from other things.
So The Executioner, which is great, and he's very good in that. Slightly miscast, perhaps, this time. So we're not going to dig into it in lots of detail, but Donald Pleasance, it's worth watching just for... any film with Donald Pleasance in is worth watching, I would say. So that's the first thing.
Even if Donald Pleasance is relegated to acting all of his scenes in a single room.
Yeah, wearing his costume from his James Bond days. It's like they asked him to bring it with him.
Yes, yeah, like, do you still have the Blofeld costume from the late 60s? Bring that with you.
So, yeah, so it's an interesting movie featuring a man who doesn't have a name. He's like the man, he is literally the man with no name.
Yeah.
He's just credited as the Rider. And he is riding a super cool, tricked out sort of Knight Rider style motorbike that's got an onboard computer that talks. But for some inexplicable reason, it speaks like a 5-year-old.
I know.
But then they added so much electronic distortion on it, you can't actually understand what it says. So it's a really odd creative choice. But he's riding his motorbike, and there's some great, I think there's some really good action scenes with him on that bike, and there's chases, and I think all that stuff was pretty good.
It was okay. I just kept being annoyed by all the things in the film that are terrible, so.
Mm. Well, why don't you tell us what some of those were?
Okay, well, let's focus on the things that are most obvious. It seems to me that possibly a full third of the dialogue in this movie was post-synced, especially at the beginning, where I think they probably originally shot the film thinking that the idea is going to be to keep the character as silent as possible through the opening, so that he remains this mysterious motorcycle rider we know nothing about. But of course, they undercut that in a way that I'll talk about in a second. But the way they undercut the character is by having him actually speaking inane dialogue in response to the stupid things his super smart motorcycle says to him.
Yeah.
And it's
his delivery is very laconic.
Right.
Like he's laid back to the point where you think, is he going to fall asleep and just fall off the back of the motorbike?
Right. And it doesn't fit. It would be much more effective if he doesn't speak at all until later in the movie, instead of saying, let's also say something else. There is not a single line of dialogue uttered by Robert Ginty in this film. I mean, not one line of dialogue that isn't terrible. That's not on him as an actor. That's on the fact that this dialogue, there's a fine line between laconic, macho dialogue and stupid. And this movie, for me, flounders in the stupid category a lot. And the dialogue is almost all bad, except for when they kind of just let Donald Pleasance go berserk. That's fun. I like listening to Donald Pleasance go berserk, but the way this film, okay, I think the more I learned about this film's production, the more I just held my head in my hands and felt a migraine coming on, because it turns out that the film, David Wirth was a guy who was a cinematographer. He'd done cinematography for a couple of Clint Eastwood films, and then he got offered the chance to, he'd come up with a story idea, presented it to an Italian producer, and the producer went, yeah, let's do that. And so brought him to Rome. He wrote up a 40-page treatment, showed it to the producer. Producer went, yeah, okay, start filming in a couple of weeks. And he didn't even have a fully written script, and just immediately started like scouting locations and making this movie. Yeah. And it shows, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways in which it shows is there's this large overarching story about the society that this whole thing comes out of, and almost all of the information that we're given about it, they had to shove into a Star Wars type opening crawl.
Oh man, that opening crawl is like reading an essay.
It's amazing. Well, here's the thing.
It's so long.
I discovered by accident that there are two different versions of that opening crawl, one larger and one smaller. The larger one actually kind of better explains all of the stupid stuff you need to do to understand, to figure out what's going on.
And I think that might be the one I saw then, because it was really long.
Yeah. And that's probably the preferable one if you want to have some kind of knowledge about what you're actually looking at. And the shorter one you can find on the print that is used by Mystery Science Theater, and in which the letters are also done in that trapezoid angled shape that the Star Wars opening crawls are done in.
Which is
hysterical, but it's also shorter and explains less of the silly weirdness that you're about to run into. But this really does have the feel of a movie that was started for the wrong reasons, without a finished script, with no real good idea of how they were going to do it, by a young director who admittedly years later is fully willing to just own up and say, yeah, I probably shouldn't have made this movie. But your enjoyment of it, I think, will kind of just boil down to how much of the cringy bad stuff in it you can deal with to get to the kind of semi amusing stuff that kind of trickles along. What did you think about the thing overall?
I have to admit, I actually really enjoyed it.
Really? Because I did not. I had forgotten.
The first 10 minutes or so, I thought, oh, this is going to be bad. But I did get sort of sucked into the story. And it does go in some bizarre directions, which I sort of appreciated. And you know, he sort of falls in love with this girl called Nastasia. And he meets these kind of higher society of mystical people, and then like Fred Williamson is just hanging around for some reason. There's some helicopter stuff.
Do you know why Fred Williamson's in the movie?
Because he couldn't help himself?
No. He was already in Italy. He ran across the writer-director and talked him into writing him into the film, writing a part for him in the film so he could spend another month in Italy.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't do much. He's only really in about three scenes.
I know.
There's one point where they're all heading for the big final battle, and then he says, oh, it's fine, I'm just going to sit here.
I'm going to stay with the helicopter.
That's because they filmed all that other stuff before he arrived or something.
Right.
But I don't know. I enjoyed it, and I did like... I thought some of the cinematography... I mean, I think they must have had a pretty good second unit doing the action stuff, because the action stuff is really good. I always worry whenever I see a helicopter involved in a low-budget Italian film.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's so many horror stories. And there's quite a lot of actual quite good stunt work, and I think, you know, people actually jumping onto the helicopter. There's no stunt doubles.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I will say I agree with you about some of the action sequences. That's true. Some of those are pretty effectively filmed and pretty interestingly shot. I'll give you that. Yeah.
And so this girl, Nastasia, tries to get the rider to come and help her rescue her father, who's about to be executed by the evil Omega, mm-hmm. Who are the sort of basically the Nazis. Because the Italian title for this film translates as The Warrior in the Year of the Omega. And the Omega are, yeah, like the evil bad guys run by Prosser, which is Donald Pleasance. So she goes to rescue her father, but then she gets left behind. She gets caught herself. And so then the rest of the film is going back again to rescue her this time. But one thing that's interesting is the actor playing her father was Harrison Muller Sr.
Yep.
Who is the father of the bad guy in our last episode's film, The Final Executioner. And Harrison Muller himself, the junior, so the one who was in the last film, he's also in this.
Yep.
Somewhere.
He's got a small role stuck in there somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. But the old guy that's playing Nastasia's dad, that's his dad, which I thought was quite fun. So the whole family are just hanging out in Italy making post-apocalypse films. Yeah, I can see why this would be a very funny film to take the mickey out of, and I will try and watch that version, because I imagine this film does offer you a lot of comic potential, but quite, just on its
quite,
own
quite a lot yes
but just on its own, like one thing I liked, whenever like a car will go over a cliff but it will explode before it crashes, don't know if you noticed that, there's a lot of that.
Oh, my favorite is the very first car that goes over a cliff and blows up, because
yeah,
the explosion, the explosives were clearly set in the hood of the car, and it's just this straight explosion straight out from the top of the car, angled for the downward trajectory of the vehicle. It's like, I backed it up a couple of times. I was like, that's really amazing to see. It adds nothing to the film other than the joy of watching a car explode. But yeah.
But they explode too soon. Like, they haven't even hit the bottom yet. Which I also was really funny. Like, they've set the timers a bit too short.
Well, it's almost as if these cars, if they're not kept at the right angle level to the ground, they'll just blow up.
That's what it is. They're just really dodgy cars. I was pleasantly surprised. Again, it's got a great poster, which is obviously better than the film. But there's a lot of interesting stuff. There's some great sort of the Omega have some good vehicles. There's this massive truck that's got all these spikes on the front, and there's a whole Indiana Jones thing where the hero has to slide underneath the truck. So they were trying. So I think they achieved more with this film under probably quite difficult circumstances than The Final Executioner did.
Yes.
Which was also probably working under similarly.
While at the same time, I feel that they're at roughly the same level of quality. They're just...
Okay, fair enough. But that film, whereas that film was just depressing, at least this one is fun. And has got Donald Pleasance in it. Which, as I said, so is always a plus.
Donald Pleasance is a major plus, and I have to admit, the final twist at the end is hilariously bad.
It's like they have the gall to set it up for a sequel.
I know. It's amazing.
Which sadly never came to pass. There you go. So those are our thoughts on Warrior of the Lost World. So if you also have films that you want us to watch, do get in touch, and you never know, we might find a way to fit them in there somewhere. But that is it for this season. We're doing Jungle Girls next time. If you missed our last episode, go back and listen to the end of that one where we talk a bit more about that. But that will be coming up, our first episode of that, in 2 or 3 weeks, I would imagine. So, yeah, let us know your favourite Italian Jungle Girl movies. I bet you all have at least one. And that's it. So enjoy the rest of whatever's left of the summer by the time you listen to this.
Yes,
Thank you for sticking with us through this long and epic journey across irradiated wastelands. I'm looking forward to getting into some verdant jungles where, we're less likely to have mutants, but maybe more likely to get killed by tigers and stuff. I don't know.
Yes. It's time for a bit of jungle eroticism. Thank you very much.
Yeah, but we just seem to be going from one dangerous environment to another. Yeah, so
but luckily only through the world of cinema, thank goodness.
Yes. Exactly. All right, thanks everybody. Get in touch in all the usual ways, and or don't. If you don't, that's also fine. We'll just be ready to talk to you in the next season. That's a terrible ending, but I'm gonna own it. I've been okay. Adrian.
It's okay. And my name is Rod. Thank you everyone for listening.
Thanks everybody. Bye.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.